Welcome back to the Hot Rod Hangout Podcast.
Whoop whoop.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Ashley.
And we got some awesome guests tonight. We got Ken Sainer from Bad Idea Customs.
Howdy.
And we got Scott. Met him today at the cruise. And they actually ran into each other in California, so
yeah,
and ended up running into Scott at the cruise today, and he was like, "Hey, I know that guy." So here we are. So, Ken, what is Bad Idea Customs?
Well, it started as a joke. I've explained this on Brian's on Hometown and on Custom Couple. It started as a joke. I'm not known for building really practical things. Like a Volkswagen Bug that we moved all of the controls to the back seat so that I could put my then 5-year-old daughter in the front seat and drive through town and freak out cops. things like that. And so years ago, I don't remember when, it probably 2015, 2016, something like that. We were going to a vintage motocross weekend, and I've had through the years, I've had several vintage motocross bikes and some BSAs and old stuff like that. And I had just sold my last BSA, and they do a poker run that is a off-road poker run, but you have to be on a pre 81. And, I no longer had any vintage dirt bikes, but what I had was a 78 Honda Goldwing 1000 full dresser with the big Vetter fairing and the stereo and the saddlebags and the trunk and floorboards and, you know, two-wheeled Buick looking thing. And I'd bought that at an auction at some point, and it just kind of was there in the shop and or behind the shop. So it's like, well, that's pre-81, and I have a Sawzall. So I was cutting this Goldwing into a dual sport dirt bike, and Bob the fenders, took all the luggage off of it, took the stereo off of it, put some motocross bars on it and some dual sport knobbies and made a dirt bike out of a Goldwing. And while I'm making that, a friend of mine who has been there for a lot of the hijinks is like, he just kept saying, and he's ridden motorcycles for 50 years and he's tends to be a little more safety conscious than I probably am. And he just kept saying, this is a bad idea. Like, Ken, this is a bad idea. Like, somebody's going to the hospital. This is a bad idea. And he just kept saying, this is a bad idea. And I'm like, most of the good ideas are bad ones. Yep. And so he starts looking around my shop and he goes, you know, it dawns on me, most of the stuff you build is kind of a bad idea. And so just as a joke, I'm like, we're Bad Idea Customs, man. And, you know, got a momentary chuckle out of it and then just forgot about it. Well, I had thrown everybody's bikes in one of my enclosed trailers for the weekend, and everybody was meeting me there at the event. Well, we have a little mom and pop print shop in our town. So I called down and said, hey, Randy, I need some stickers made. So when I showed up at the races, at the vintage races, everybody's bikes that were in my trailer had Bad Ideas Custom stickers on them. And we just rolled them out as a joke. And from there, people just started, they kind of thought it was a funny name. And, you know, well, so what do you build? Well, we build bad ideas. We build stuff that you probably shouldn't. And so then it went from that and had some other stickers made, and it just kind of became a thing that we joked about for a year or so. And then I was down at West Coast Customs show where I met Scott. Couple of years prior to when I met you, and Bow Monster was there. I don't know if you follow any of his artwork, but Bow Monster is an incredible scratchboard artist. If you want to just get your mind blown, just Google search Bow Monster. he does scratch art with the razor knife. Okay. So it's all black and white, but he does all like lowbrow and automotive and, and so Bo and I start BSing and, you know, where you're from, blah, 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 and we're sitting there shooting the bull and he finds out about Bad Idea Customs. And then he finds out that we're based in an old grain elevator. So we are in a 12,000 square foot grain elevator that's 92 feet tall. And
which is a bad idea.
Which is a bad idea. And he's like, you got to let me build you a logo. Like, that would be crazy. And I was like, that, dude, I know what your art goes for. I can't afford to spend the kind of money you get to build a logo for a business that doesn't exist. And so we kept BSing, and like 20 minutes later, he's like, man, you got to build me a logo. You got to let me build you a logo. So he gave me a price that I'd have been a fool to pass up on. And so I sent him, when I got home, I took one of my choppers and my 63 Merc and my 26 T Roadster and parked him in front of the grain tower and sent some pictures to him. And, so he came up with our logo now. So we started having shirts made. Well, out of that came, we own the website, but we never done anything with it. And, then started just posting junk on Instagram. And, all of a sudden we started like showing up at car shows and seeing people in our shirts. It's like, oh, that's freaking weird. You know, like,
you became known without being known.
Yeah. Like I'm the most famous know nothing, do nothing you've ever known, you know? And, not that I'm famous, but you know what I mean? So in my other company, I own a marketing company and we set up displays and we have some automotive clients. And so I thought, well, I got to talking with my accountant and I have, I have a few cars in my collection, but, it's like most car guys, it's kind of an always evolving, always changing. I'm somewhere in the low 40s of cars that I have currently registered and insured. Last time I actually went through it with my accountant, it was 44, but that was several months back. So it's probably gone up or down a number or two. So we started figuring out a way, is there a way to make the car collection a business so that we can write some of this junk off? At that point, Bad Idea Customs became a legitimate business. We're filed with the state and we have all the proper paperwork. We are licensed as a specialty vehicle leasing company. I have my inventory listed with some production companies that shoot like commercials and stuff in Montana. None of them have ever used any of my stuff, but it's just so that I can legitimately claim that it's out there.
Right.
But so what we do is my marketing company rents vehicles from Bad Idea Customs, and then we lease them. The marketing company, uses them in customers' displays and customers, you know, if they're having an event and they want cars or whatever. And so we do probably, I don't know, 20 to 25 events a year where some of my cars will be in the displays.
Thank you.
And so there's really no money because it's one of my businesses paying my other business. So it's not profitable, but what it does is it legitimately makes all of my cars, all of my maintenance, all of my insurance, the buildings that I keep them in, the insurance for those buildings, my fuel, you know, Coker tires are expensive.
Yes, they are.
All that stuff. It now it's all a write-off. So it's a long way of saying Bad Idea Customs started as a joke and then became something different, and now it's something completely different. I don't build cars for anybody other than me or my friends. When people ask me, you know, hey, what would you charge for X? You know, what would you charge to four Linka, whatever? My answer is always the same. I won't work on your car, but you're welcome to use my shop, my tools, and my time, and I'll show you how to do it yourself. And anybody that wants to can come in my shop and bag something, four link it, build motor mounts, whatever you want to do. And, you know, I'll lend a hand. But if you drop your car off and say, call me when it's done, your phone's never going to ring. So I just don't work on it. It is a hobby, 100%. Right. Nothing I want to do for a living. And
that's when they become customers, and customers come with complaints, and nobody wants that anyway. So if you're helping a buddy work on his car, that's a completely different story. Yeah.
And that's what I've always said is, like, if I want to play with cars all day, but I don't want to build shit for other people. No. Like, I'll build cool shit for me, and then you can buy it.
Well, and that's why, that's why I've gone through so many cars. My current car count is, I've had 471 cars since I was 16. Wow. And it's because I don't build things for other people. Mm-hmm. I build what I want. And if you don't like that, it's really simple. Don't buy it.
Yeah.
Like, there's, and it doesn't make me a bad guy or you a bad guy. We just like different things. But as long as you're a car guy, we're still cool. We're good people. And you go find the seat that you want your butt in, and everybody's happy. Yeah. And like you said, when they become customers, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. And I also, you know, if I start on a project and kind of lose inspiration, it gets thrown in the storage building, and it might be 2 years till I pull it back out again.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, if it's a customer's car, you gotta
power.
It's like, I don't want to work on this thing today. Well, too bad, you're being paid. Mm-hmm. And so I just have no interest in doing that.
Well, in those 400 and some cars that you've had over the few years.
More than a few, but thank you.
You're welcome. What would you say the one that got away, one that you would want back in a heartbeat? A lot to choose from there.
Well, there are two vehicles that I really, if I had the opportunity to buy them back, and it's ironic that Scott is here tonight, because one of them is a 66 Cariel Suburban. And I had the opportunity to buy that back. I had that car when I was in my 20s. And sold it to a guy who bought it for his 16-year-old son. And like the day I sold that truck, I regretted it.
Yeah.
And about 3 years later, I had the opportunity to buy it back. And I was living in Hawaii at the time, and the truck was in Oregon. And he called me and said, you know, he always said, if I sell this, to call you. And I was on the airplane the next day with a bag of cash and headed back to get my truck back.
Yeah.
And when I got there, it just broke my heart. The kid had just destroyed it. It
wasn't the same truck.
It had been wrecked, huge gouge all the way down from nose to tail down the driver's side. The interior was just demolished. It had all new interior in it when I had it. And he was working in construction in the summers and jumping in and out of it and hauling lumber and hauling bags of concrete in it and everything, which, yeah, that's what trucks are for, but that's not what the interior was. This one was built for. And, he had just absolutely destroyed the interior, and there was dents all over it. Windshield was broken. It was just not the same truck.
They didn't even give you like a heads up.
He told me when I said, is the truck basically how it was when you got it? And he said, well, his little brother leaned his bicycle on it and put a scratch on the driver's side, and the interior could probably use a good cleaning. That was how he described it to me. And this is in the late 90s.
Right.
So it wasn't like I could say, hey, pull out your iPhone and send me some pics.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so based on just knowing the truck that I had given him, and based on what he was telling me, I thought, you know, all right, here we go. And I got there and it was just destroyed, so I didn't buy it back.
That story is consistent with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other one is probably a 76 K20 that we took down to Bare Metal, did all the rust repair on it, and new small block 400, new trans, rebuilt the transfer case, was lifted, new paint. It was a factory AC truck, and it was just a really pretty little, we called it Kermit because it was in the mid-70s. Chevy had that kind of metallic Kermit the Frog green. Mm-hmm. And it was a beautiful truck, and everything from front to back was new on that truck. And somebody offered me what at the time was a lot of money for that truck. You know, this was 2000.
Before the giant.
Yeah. I think I sold that truck for $8,000.
Which was good money in the early 2000s.
Yeah. In 99, 2000, that was a lot of money for a 76 Chevy. Mm-hmm. That one I miss. But other than that, the thing about those cars is it taught me, and I think this is evident in the fact that I haven't regretted selling a car for 24 years now. Mm-hmm. Those cars, they were kind of back to back. Those both happened, and one was in 98 and one was in 2000. They taught me to categorize cars when I buy them. And now when I buy a vehicle, it is, I'm going to play with this till I'm bored, or this is a never going to be sold vehicle. Mm-hmm. And so my never to be sold collection is small. It's, I don't know, probably four cars, maybe five right now. But my play with till I'm bored collection has always made enough money, and it's never been, I've never been in it for the money, but well, let me back up. I say if they've made money, if I'm not paying myself for my time.
Right.
But the cars that I just play with, you know, buy a 63 Impala four door, spend $2,000 bagging it, throw some Supremes on it, and, you know, sell it for $5,000 more than I paid for the car. That type of a deal.
Yeah. You get the physical money back out.
Yeah.
Your work is enjoyment.
Yeah. It's therapy. It's, you know, it's cheaper than therapy. But the flip cars have always funded the never sell cars.
Right. Right.
And so the pink 63 Merc that I was driving when I met Scott,
mm-hmm.
I absolutely stole that car, and I will never sell that car. I don't know. Unfortunately, my phone got ran over by an RV and I lost a bunch of photos, but I don't know if I get pictures of that or not. But it's a 63 Mercury Monterey Breezeway. So the back window is power and drops down into the trunk.
Oh, geez.
It is factory carnation pink with a mauve roof. And, Scott's got a picture of it on his phone.
Yeah. Oh, that is clean. We're going to need a copy of that.
I bought that car for $3,700.
Oh, wow.
Not that long ago, too. I think 2016. I am the second registered owner. I'm the third owner, but the second registered owner of that car. Mm-hmm. The original owner owned it from new until about 3 months before I bought it. And a guy in Spokane, Washington, bought it for his wife and thinking she would like it, and she hated it. And so
if mom ain't happy, it's gotta go.
Yeah. That thing popped up on Craigslist for, I think he had it up for like $3,500, I think is what he had for it. And I called him, cause this was back when we still used Craigslist and people would talk on the phone like grownups. So I called him. I'm like, I want your car. I'm 3 hours away. And he's like, well, and I, you know, Craigslist, you can see when the ad went up, and it had only been up like 45 minutes. And he said, well, you're like the fourth or fifth guy that's called. And I'm like, okay, you're asking $3,500 for it. Here's the deal. If you'll pull that ad right now, like I'm going to refresh this ad in 60 seconds. If it's gone, I'll be at your house in 3 hours with $3,700 cash. And he's like, you're going to pay me more? I'm like, if you pull the ad right now. Okay. I said, okay. I said, I will call you. I said, I'm going to be leaving my house in the next 15 minutes. I'll call you and let you know I'm on the way. And I'll call you when I get to the top of Lookout. And I'll call you when I hit Coeur d'Alene. So you know I'm not BSing. I'm on my way. And he's like, okay. And 3 hours later, I showed up with $3,700. And now that's in my permanent collection. And it's a 390 car. And it cruises at 70. Load it down with six people. And
well, still chugging along.
Drive it from Montana to Santa Maria, California. That's where I got with it.
Now, with the Never Sold collection, is that also being used by Bad Idea Customs in some of the shows as well?
Yeah. Okay. Brian and I were talking the other night about how we look like a Fisher-Price toy in my T Roadster. That's just a little, I hate the term rat rod, but it is, I will say it's an unfinished. Mm-hmm. And probably never will get finished because I'm having too much fun driving. Right. But it's two different 26T bodies welded together on a home-built chassis with a, I think that one's got a GM 12 bolt in it, I think. And it's got a 35 Chevy truck grille that's laid back. It has windshield posts, but I've never put a windshield on it.
Who needs a windshield?
I've been driving that for 7 years now. And I still don't have a door latch on one side, so it still uses a bungee cord to hold the door shut. But it's a car that weighs 1,600 pounds, 1,700 pounds maybe, and it's got a board 30 over 302 with a mild cam in it. So not any horsepower, but the power-to-weight ratio is just a hoot in that thing. Mm-hmm. And I've got little skinny bias ply wide whites on it that it smokes them at will. Again, that was a car that I'm not in a whole bunch of money, but it just kind of suited me. And plus, you know, a fat kid pulling up in a 26 T Roadster, you know, it's gets the looks. I have a 63 Econoline pickup, one of the van nose pickup. Mm-hmm. That's probably hope to in the never sell category. Probably my 67 Bronco would probably fall in that category. Mm-hmm. And then the last one that I would say, I won't say it's in the never sell, would be my 51 Country Squire Woody Wagon. Yeah. I would sell that one.
It would just cost a lot.
But it'd take a chunk. Yeah. Somebody's going to lose a house over that car.
That's the 32 that's sitting out there.
Yeah.
I finally got the truck that's going to be the bare metal truck that I've wanted for quite a few years now. So it's going to cost somebody a lot of money to get that. Way more than it's worth. And if you want to give me it, then you can have it.
Even a part you've gotten an offer that was
almost twice of what I paid for it. And I told the guy, no, thank you.
Yeah. I have sold cars. And I guess it's unfair to say they are that
anything. Everything has a number.
Yeah, everything
has
a number.
It just might be really large.
It's a really stupid number. And it's like if you're willing to pay that. Yeah. You know, we built a Corvair pickup and then we took a Corvair Greenbrier van. And I don't know if you've ever seen the Corvair ramp side pickups.
Yes.
So because there is no, the engine, everything's in the back, because there is no drive line or anything to run under the floor of the bed, the floor of the bed is very low in those. And that was kind of the marketing shtick of them was with the ramp door on the side, you could roll a lawnmower into them or run a wheelbarrow up into them because the floor of the bed is very low. Mm-hmm. So when you're standing in the bed of that truck, the roof of the cab is about chest high on me and I'm 6'1". So, we built a bar in the back of it. We had four taps and a soda gun and, a little 6-bottle rack for whiskeys and an ice cooler. And then we took the matching van, the Corvair Greenbrier van. And we cut it in half, top to bottom, because the van and the pickup, the Econolines are the same way. The van and the pickup, they're identical body lines from the belt line down. They look the same. So cut the van in half, top to bottom, then cut it in half front to back. So we took the back lower quarter of this Corvair van, which had all the same body lines, same vent sides, same fender wells, same tail lights, everything as the pickup. Then we took the nose, moved the nose 6 feet back and reattached it to the then stubbed up van. And I have a friend of mine who's really good with an English wheel. He made me roll pans for it and like filled in the headlight openings. And we put 7 feet of Weber barbecues in that van and rerouted all the propane valves through the wall of the trailer now. And we put it on a custom trailer chassis. And then we took, because the drip rails were the same, the radius of the roof line was the same, we took and cut like the front 30 inches off the roof of that van, because that's where the roof of the pickup was. And we matched the radius to the back of the cab and built like a bimini top cover for the bar out of the van roof and put it on, because that roof, the floor was so low, it only had to come up just a little bit and a 6'5" guy can stand under it. So we painted the van roof and made it match the curve of the back of the cab, and the drip rails lined up perfect. And so in transport mode, the van roof was even with the roof line of the pickup, and it protected, you know, the kegerators and everything. And when we'd get to a car show or whatever we were doing, you just hit a switch and we had linear actuators on all four corners, and the roof would raise up 30 inches. And so you had a full rolling bar with a 7-foot barbecue and everything behind it. And it was all painted to match. And that was going to be a, I'm never going to sell this. Mm-hmm. Well, like the second time we took it out,
somebody had to have it.
Somebody had to have it. And I gave him a number that I still say he was a fool to pay. Thinking that was my way of telling him, go away. Mm-hmm. And I gave him a number that was more than that vehicle was worth, in my opinion. And he paused for a second and went, I think that'd work. You know, follow me to the bank. I was like,
okay.
Yeah, let me get these hot dogs off the grill and we'll
throw in the whiskey bottles. So there's
a few that have been in the I'm never going to sell this that somebody offers me, you know, a foolish amount of money. And when that happens, they go away. But
all right, Scott, what's your car that got away?
Car that got away was a car that I never actually owned.
Okay.
I just had the opportunity to buy 2 Mercury Cyclone Spoiler 2s.
Okay.
Yeah, the NASCAR version, the Cale Yarborough, and the Dan Gurney versions. They are closing a racetrack in Fremont, California, the Baylands Raceway. And the groundskeeper had those two and a Talladega, a maroon Talladega. And he was selling them all for like $3,500 a piece. This was back in 86. I was house poor. We just bought our first house. Oh. And I took the VIN numbers, and I had a friend in Bakersfield who was a NASCAR kind of guy, and he knew everything. He had all those cars. And so I had him validate them, you know, because I had a question about one of them. And he said, oh, no, those are, everything's good on that, and here's the reason why. And he gave me the reason why. But those were the ones that got away.
Yeah.
You know, and I just, I wish. You know, looking at Super Ford magazine a couple of years later, you know, the spoilers, they were 60 known registered out of a potential run of 500 to make it NASCAR eligible. And to think that both of them were there.
Man.
Yay.
So swipe through those.
So while I'm looking at these, Ken, what's the favorite car you own? I know you have a wide selection.
That I currently own?
Yes, that you currently own.
Probably out of the never sell.
Right now, probably my favorite is my Woody car.
And that's at your bottom would never sell list.
Yeah. it's just the most fun to play with. And it, the whole thing about one of the biggest things that's cool about vintage cars is they just always make people smile. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you pull into a grocery store and, you know, everybody's happy to see those cars, and it brings back memories. It brings back nostalgia. That's with the barbecue on it. It just brings back so many happy memories for a lot of people. And because of, you know, the Woody cars were made famous and like by the Beach Boys tunes and that era, there's just a lot of people who have heard of those cars, but really didn't see them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so when you pull into Walmart with one, people really get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
And so that's what makes that car so fun is that it's an immediate nostalgia thing for most people that see it and makes people smile.
Yeah. We've said that numerous times, you know, pull in somewhere and, you know, when we're in the 54 and people like, oh, I had my first date in a 54, or my grandpa had one, or, you know, my dad bought one brand new, and it's like, cool.
I forgot. There's one more on my probably never sell list. And I wouldn't call this my favorite because it's not done. Mm. And it's, I'll be honest, it's really not my era. I pretty rapidly lose interest once you pass 64. Mm-hmm. But I was raised by a huge Mustang fan. When my dad left Vietnam, he ordered a 70 Mach 1 428 Cobra Jet with the drag pack and red with the black rally stripes and the louvers and the shaker scoop and the oil cooler and, you know, the posse. And specced that car out and ordered it through the PX when he was still in Vietnam. And when he came home from Vietnam, that car was sitting at Marv Tonkin Ford in Portland, Oregon, waiting for him when he got home from Vietnam.
That's awesome.
And so dad, that era of Mustangs, you know, the 65 to the 70s, 64 and a half to the 70s, that first and second gen Mustangs, they were just always revered in our house, you know. Mm-hmm. And the Steve McQueen movie Bullet, that was a rite of passage in our home that you had to know that movie. Mm-hmm. And so I now have a 1968 GT Fastback 390 S code 4-speed, no power steering, no air conditioning Mustang. That is the exact, as far as under the hood, it's what Steve McQueen drove in the 68 movie Bullet. And
that's her car.
I'm over here getting so excited. Literally, I mean, before I met him, Mustangs were like my dream car. End of story. That was the only car that I could ever even think of.
She stole a key for a Mustang.
I didn't steal it. Somebody left it behind. And I don't know how they drove home because it's one of those fobs that you need it to start it. And I don't know how they got home unless they had the spare in the car. Anyway, besides the point, I do have a Mustang key. But that's my car to a T. I mean, granted, my favorites have expanded on vehicles, but... Still,
well, you married a Chevy guy, but that's
Well, it's got a special place in my heart.
There's a Ford out there that I just said I would never sell.
Yeah. So the McQueen car was Highland green with the black interior. Mm-hmm. My car has been, I won't say restored, it was repainted and cleaned up to the wrong colors. My car was originally presidential blue with the black interior. But it's been painted an off red with a cream interior. And so it's being redone. and I will put it back to the original black interior, but I'm probably going to paint it Highland green instead of Presidential blue and probably do a bullet tribute car with it. That's one of those cars that you really won't hurt the value if you make a bullet tribute out of it instead of taking it back to the original color. Now, I'm sure there are people out there that would disagree with that statement, but it's my car. I'm going to paint it what makes me smile. Yep. And just the way I was raised.
There's some Ford guys out there right now that are saying that you're claiming to be a Ford guy and you're fixing to change this. This is sacrilegious.
And when one of them writes me a really large check, they can paint it any color. <they want>.
Yes. Yes, sir. Okay. So, Scott, what's the favorite car that you own currently?
I like my 51 Chevy, the custom I'm working on.
Oh, yeah?
51 awesome. Hard top with building a Carson top for it. It's bagged nice. And 350, 350, and I'm making some custom headlight buckets for it. And hopefully we'll get it back on the road here soon.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a custom with a K.
Custom with a K. That's right.
Well, and I mean, you're getting your shop put up soon, and so hopefully that'll speed things along for you.
Yeah, that's got cement poured, and building should go up in the next probably 6 weeks or so.
Hell yeah.
Shops are one of those things that they're never big enough. Like, no matter how no matter
we know.
Like I should have just built a one car garage and been fine with that because it didn't matter. I'm still not going to have enough room. So,
right. Yeah. Well, the guy's house that we hung out at today, 40x60 shop, still not big enough. But he cleaned out part of the shop to have us all hanging out inside because it's, freezing. And he's like, well, I just realized now I can get more projects. And it's like, you got like 5 cars sitting outside right now still. Yes. And I mean, it still doesn't seem big enough, even though it's a giant shop.
And he has a way better example. His 54 has a way better bodywork than my 54. And it's currently sitting outside. He did throw a tarp over it, but still.
I just, fortunately for my... with my line of work, I have a lot of enclosed trailers.
Yeah.
And so I can't fit all of my cars in my shop. I have a 2-airplane hangar. I don't own an airplane, but I have a 2-airplane hangar. And it's completely chock full. And I have several cars at different friends' houses and stuff. And, but the bummer about my shop is it's a fairly large shop if you look at the square footage, but it's an addition on an addition on an addition type of thing because the building was built in the 50s, and then, in the 60s they added on one part, and then in the 80s they added another part, and then in the 90s they added another part, and then 2020 I added 1,500 square feet more off the back of it. Jeez. And so it's a lot of square footage, but it's one narrow path. Get through it. So, like my daughter has a 62 Pontiac Tempest, and this was back when the Le Mans was an options package on the Tempest. It wasn't its own designation yet. That's gorgeous. So she has my 15-year-old daughter has a 62 Pontiac Tempest Le Mans convertible, and she was getting her license in Montana. You can get your license when you're 15. And because I got that car for her when she was 13, I think. And so it got shoved in the very back of the shop. And, well, this last summer, she got her learner's permit. And she's like, Dad,
it's got
to
come out.
She calls it Tony the Tempest. She's like, Tony needs to come out. And it's like, geez, oh, Friday, how many cars I got to move to get that thing out of there? And there's this little, so because I live in the old grain elevator, I'm kind of in, and I use this term very liberally because our town's only half a mile long, but I live in the commercial, quote unquote, part of town. So I'm 200 yards from the main greenway in town where they have all the town festivals and blah, blah, blah. Well, there was a car show coming up, And so I told my daughter, I'm like, all right, Plains Day Car Show, we'll get Tony out because then I'll have a place to put all the cars. And so Saturday morning rolls around and I just start backing stuff out of the shop and driving it across the street, dumping it in the car show, and then come back, grab another car, dump it in the car show. And there was, it was kind of funny. There were 39 cars entered in the car show that day. And 12 of them were mine. but we got Tony out. but that's the frustrating thing about my shop. I've got the square footage, but just the way it was added on and added on and added on, it's really long and narrow.
Right.
And so you got to pick the two or three that are going to be your favorite for the next 3 months, and they stay in the back, and other stuff gets buried. And so, but yeah, you never have enough square footage. And my wife always jokes. So my wife and I have been together since high school. She was 14, freshman in high school, and we started dating. And been together a long time, so this crap is not a surprise to her. and she talked to me a couple years ago. So I have my friend Todd, who is the guy who inadvertently named my shop Bad Idea Customs. She's like, look, I know you have cars that I don't know about. And like, I'm okay with that. But if you ever die, I'm going to lose thousands of dollars because I don't know where your stuff is. And I'm like, if I ever die, call Todd. Todd knows where all the bodies are. He knows, like,
all the skeletons in the closet. He knows where they're at.
And that conversation came up after she came home from running errands or whatever she was doing that day. And she came home and there's a boat in the driveway. And she says, whose boat? I said, well, that's actually our boat. And
don't you like our boat?
She said, where did we get that? And I said, I traded a 52 Chevy sedan for that boat. Where did we get a 52 Chevy sedan? I said, well, last year I traded my 51 Chevy 5-window pickup for that sedan. Where'd you get the 51? I said, I had the 51 for about 6 years. She said, how come I never saw this truck? I said, simple. I didn't want to have the conversation we're having right now. So it was after that. She's like, look, I know you have stuff hidden all over this county. Like, just don't leave me financially twisting when you kick off and we're going to be fine. So yeah, she has been instructed to call Todd. Todd knows where the vehicles are hidden. And,
not necessarily just in the county either.
No, these are facts. Yeah.
I remember hearing a story of one being parked in a certain other podcast garage for a while.
Yeah. My 53 lived at Brian's for a while. I have a bunch of trucks scattered all over, and I used to keep one or two down in Texas. And I had one in the Northeast for a while. It's not uncommon for me to have vehicles in Oregon because I'm there quite a bit for work. I bought property in Yucca Valley, California, because I'm trying to build a shop down there so that I can keep
more cars.
Stuff down there, because that's year-round cruising down there. And so when it's, you know, 10 below at my house, I can pop down there and cruise. But so I'm working on getting a place to stash some cars down there too. So
if budget wasn't an option, like there was no budget, you could build whatever you wanted to build, what would be the dream build?
59 Cadillac.
Knew that right off rip.
That's the one.
Okay.
59 Caddy on bags. That's the one. And I almost bought one at the Starboard show 3 years ago. I was the guy offering way more than the car was worth. I was like, wow, so this is what this feels like. This sucks. But I threw him a number and he said, yeah. And I said, you know, I'll give me a week to put some cash together. And I went home and thought better of it and called him and said, I'm going to have to pass, but I still wish I'd have bought that car. But yeah, that's the one. Most of the cars that I like, I've owned at least one,
right,
if not a few through the years. I love shoebox Fords. I mean, I currently have four of them. I've had probably over 20 of them in my life. But 59 Caddy is a car that I've always wanted. I've never had one, and someday, but the problem is those stupid things just keep going up and up and up and up in price. And so, but yeah, that's the someday car.
Okay. Scott, what's your dream build or dream?
Oh boy. I have three that I've always wanted since I was a kid. One was a GT40.
Okay.
One was a Superbird. Mm-hmm. And then a 4950 Merc.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
There were a couple Mercs there today.
There was?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I saw both my Superbirds at Mecham last week in the colors that I love, the petty blue and the lime green, and they had them side by side.
Oh.
And they were in a room together, and I was just like,
Two years ago,
in a GT40 that sold for $6.9 million or whatever, you know.
Right. You didn't write a check? Come on.
Yeah. No, I forgot the trailer.
Okay. Yeah, you don't want to throw that home and open the letter. Yeah. 2 years ago, at 22, at Viva Las Vegas, there was a chopped 50 Mercury that was for sale for an extremely fair price. It was an older build. It was probably, I'm going to say it was probably an 80s build, but it was done very well, and had the cool grill work done and had a chop and, you know, Chevy small block, blah, blah, blah. But it was a really well done car, and I think they only wanted 30 for it, which was a really fair price for that car. I called my brother Wow. and told him he needed to come buy it, but he just bought an airplane, so he was not in the market for a car.
Wow.
Yeah. Actually, the two Mercs today, you had both examples. You had a stock one, and then you had a very custom with a K, chopped, mm-hmm. and yes. slammed.
And I, of course, me being me and being nosy, I looked in, and he had a picture of how it was before he chopped it. And then on the side window... It said, I'm going to answer all your questions. And it was like a little printout. And it right. said how many miles, how much the chop was, this, the motor, the tranny, everything. I was like, oh, hell yeah.
See, that's why my wife hates driving the vintage stuff. Mm-hmm. Because she doesn't want to talk to people.
You got to get a little car to put in the window.
That's what she's always threatened. She's like, I'll drive your cars mm-hmm. when you put the door magnets that say what year it is, what mm-hmm. engine, where we got it. Blah, yep. blah, blah. She's like, I don't want to talk to people at a stoplight.
Mm-hmm.
And
that it does draw a crowd.
Yeah,
yeah. I took a picture of that
yes.
mm-hmm.
Thing that she said. Yeah. There's 19,
it's on Facebook.
19 questions.
The FAQ portion of yes. the car right. show. That's funny.
Yeah, I got a kick out of it because I mean, when we got started and we got Michelangelo, I was like, oh shoot, now I got to remember things about this, because if I'm ever caught driving it by myself, still don't know how to drive it by myself, but if we're I ever get we're working on it, if I ever get caught, I need to have this stuff memorized. And I'm still tripping up, and we've had it for 6 or 7 months.
Yeah,
and I still get tripped up on 6 inline, can't remember the tranny now.
S10
tranny,
S10 rear end.
Yeah, I don't know, see what I mean.
Lower than whale dick.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Just read the for sale sign in the back window.
Yeah. I raised that car up.
Yeah, that's what you said.
Mm-hmm.
That car is 2 inches higher, and it has stock springs in the front, and it still sits that low.
And we still got stuck coming out of breakfast this morning on our way.
Stuck.
Yes.
I had to luckily, I hadn't high-centered completely. The back tires were still in the ground, so I could back up, but it made the very bad noise. And I can't even come at it at an angle. And I was like, no, that's still...
That's static drop on my 63. So it's not as low as your 54, but it's
still close. It's
fairly.
Yeah. Really, the one... If I took that and had the exhaust redone on it, because previous owner ran it under the cross members instead of through the cross member. Oh,
yeah.
And then when I changed the manifolds on it, it wasn't the same angle, so I couldn't use what he had. And at the time, I didn't have a welder, period. And I can't weld exhaust anyway. So it was, hey, this is what you're looking for. Go buy me some flex pipe. And she's like, okay. She gets back, and I'm like, okay, build the exhaust. Make that connect to that.
And, of course, I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm just like, okay, there's one end, there's the other, and I got to connect them somehow. Oh, and we're using clamps, so then I'm like, okay, hand me this, hand me that, because I need this and that. And
She fits better under that car than I do.
Where did you find FlexPike these days?
Advance Auto Parts.
Yep. Really?
Yep.
They have 2-inch, 2.5-inch.
Huh? We're looking for a sponsorship, Advance, if you're listening.
Yes.
It's like you've done this before.
My wife is, I will say this, just from the sheer amount of exposure she's had to the car life, being with me for over 30 years, she knows more about cars than most people, but it's still really not her thing.
Right.
But she has a bit of a stubborn streak in her, and I don't know if you ever saw them or remember them in... Early 90s, they only made them for 2, maybe 3 years, like 90, 91. Mercury re-released the small Capri, and they were a little two-seater convertible, kind of Miata-esque. Mm-hmm. And they were a front engine, rear-wheel drive, and a little two-seater convertible. And I picked one up as part of a, like, I wanted these two cars, but I had to buy all three to get the price, and and it had a bad head gasket and a little four cylinder, and it's like the last thing I'm going to put my energy into is a 1991 Capri, right?
Yeah.
But she loved that car. She kept hounding me, fix the Capri so I can drive it.
Yeah.
And I just told her I'm not going to work, and I was a much younger man then. I was, you know, probably not being a real good husband. I said, I'm not going to work on that car. If you want to drive that car, you fix it. So she went and bought a repair manual and pulled the head off that stupid Capri.
Hell yeah.
And she took it down to the machine shop, had the head redone, and she changed the head gasket on it, and she drove that car for about a year. And there I was like, go. All right, I guess now we know. And
so she can work on stuff.
Yeah. I used to run mini stocks, little hopped up four cylinders on quarter mile dirt ovals. Mm-hmm. And I had I think the last car I ran was a 84 Fox body with a
2.3.
With a 2.3 and an Esslinger cam and decked head and header through the firewall and, you know, all the whole deal. She actually built the rotating assembly on that engine that I ran in that the last season I raced that car. And,
oh, yeah.
And that was a few minutes ago. That was in, 2002. So, yeah.
But. Yeah, I've fallen and bumped my head and did that roundy-round shit with an X. And she ran mini stock. Well, the end of it was mod minis, which is basically just like late model chassis with a four-cylinder in it, which... still Fox body based, because that is the one thing that Ford figured out. The Fox body chassis works everywhere.
Yeah.
So I had the question, I forgot it. What show or event do you try to make every year?
And not the ones for work.
Yeah. Car stuff. Well, I guess car stuff bleeds over to that too. But
I don't have one that I try to go to every single year, but I have four that I try to make it to at least two of them every year.
Okay.
Lone Star Roundup, Viva Las Vegas, West Coast Customs, and the Starboard Show in Oklahoma.
Okay.
I try to make it to two of those every year. In 23, I screwed up and went to three of them.
That doesn't sound like a screw up. That sounds like a good time.
So 23, I did, Brian and I went to, the Starboard Show in Tulsa. Then I was back down there for the Hot Rod Tour of Texas. And then
that's the one you took your daughter's C10 on, right?
Well, my two daughters drove the C10, and my wife and I drove I have a 1950 shoebox Ford. It's called the Crestliner, which was Ford's luxury sedan of that era. Mm-hmm. And so I have it's an older restoration, but I bought it. I bought the car literally out of a showroom of a car dealership. And so I took my Crestliner, and it's still flat E3 on the tree, factory overdrive. So yeah, my wife and I drove that, and my daughters drove my oldest 69 C10. And then I stayed for, I can't remember which one was first, Lone Star or Tour of Texas. I think Lone Star was first. I stayed for Lone Star Roundup, and then they flew down and we did Tour of Texas. And then my dad is getting older, and he's had some health issues, and I don't think I'm going to have that many more opportunities to take dad to cruises with me. Mm-hmm. So when West Coast Customs came around this year, my original plan was to not go because I went to Starboard and Roundup, but just talking with my wife, and she's like, yeah, you guys need to go. And I had just gotten the Woody car, and so dad was really excited that I had just gotten the Woody car. And so me and one of my buddies and my dad mobbed down there in the motorhome and towed the Woody car down and took it down on the beach at Pismo, and so got to cruise that with dad. So that was the three that I went to.
Hell yeah.
This year. In 22, I think, I made it to Invasion. Mm. And I think this year we're going to try to come down for Drag and Destroy, which I'm hoping, and I need to talk to Rusty, but hopefully what would be ideal is if Drag and Destroy and Invasion were back-to-back weekends. I'm afraid they're probably going to be on the same weekend, but because I was actually... It was a very small sponsorship, but I was one of the sponsors for the Invasion this year, but I ended up not even being able to make it down. Mm-hmm. But turns out they were okay with that. They spend the money just the same. Yeah. but yeah, so 2024, I'm hoping to do Lone Star Roundup, Drag and Destroy, and Invasion. Those are the three that I'm hoping to make this year. But, West Coast always seems to get thrown in there because it's one of those, like, the cruise starts, 7 o'clock on Friday night, I think, is the cruise in Santa Maria. And it's, I think it's like 1,400 miles or 1,300 miles for us to get down there. And it's always the same. We're not going to go to Santa Maria this year. We're not going to go to Santa Maria this year. And then Wednesday morning at breakfast, it's like, we should go. We should go. You know, and it's, you know, so you end up doing the mad dash. You know, hey, we're leaving tomorrow at 6 a.m. Who's in? Oh, yeah. And then, so I'll never rule that show out. But the plan is this year to not do Starboard and not do West Coast. But like we were talking earlier, I would really love to make it to Ventura Nationals. That's a show I've always wanted to go to. But Labor Day weekend is one of our busiest weekends of the year. We're triple and a lot of years quadruple booked, and we have events going in multiple states and kind of got to work. So
yeah,
got to make that money so you can go to more shows anyway.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh. So what's a show that you try to get to every year?
Well, before I moved here back to Florida, it was Grand National. We would help do the setup with them. We have a crew with custom mics. On the Facebook page, you met Mike.
Yep.
And we would go in there on Wednesday night, Thursday for setup. And that was one show that, we'd be there, putting the stanchions up. We get to see everybody pull in, and great opportunity for us to take pictures. You know, we do a lot of photography and video, and we get to tear it down.
Yeah,
on Sunday night. So we're there for 4 days, and that's one I've always tried to go to. I missed it this past year. I'm not going to make it this year, but Custom Car Revival in Indianapolis is a traditional custom show, and that's about 200 cars. It's a semi-invitation type event, and that's a really good one. We have people from the west come, and people from the east. It's a good meeting point in the middle there. And one I'd like to get to is over in France. My friend McCoy Speed Shop over in Normandy, France, has a really big traditional American style hot rod show, hot rod and custom show over there.
Hell yeah!
And he's a big guy over there. McCoy Speed Shop is his shop, and he does a lot of stuff. And that's one I'd like to get to. He invites me every year, and I'm like, I'm gonna try to get there. But, retirement and COVID and moving
that's,
out
that's
here.
That's not a road trip either.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't just decide on Wednesday at breakfast.
Yeah. Next flight to Paris.
Yeah.
I always wanted, and I'm pretty sure it's now defunct, but they used to do one called the Hot Rod Hayride in England. It was like out somewhere out in the countryside there, and it was a big full weekender with a hill climb race and like a timed gravel road hill climb race, and all these guys out there mobbing their Model A's and stuff like that up there, and a bunch of live music, and they'd have like the Wall of Death motorcycle riders would come in, and that was one of my like, someday I'm going to do that. I wanted to ship a car over and then drive out to
kind of like a trog type thing.
I always wanted to ship a car over and drive out to that event, but I think it went away 2018, 2019, I think somewhere around there. I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one, though. But they do have the A-Bombers over in Sweden, I think. And they have something that's kind of similar, where they have this hill climb type thing, bikes and cars and trucks, and they just, it's kind of a dirt road, and they have a lot of fun with that. That's in the summertime in Sweden, which is, a month and a half?
Today
it's like summer in Montana,
right? Yeah. You guys are on the same parallel, right?
Yeah. Let me run in and grab my board shorts. Oh, I missed it. Doggone it. We'll catch it next year.
That's kind of like Florida in the winter.
Yeah,
jacket and jeans in the morning, and jacket comes off if you're around the house, shorts and a jacket maybe, and then it's although today was kind of chilly rolling out at 8 o'clock this morning. But
the last 2 days have been really cold.
Yeah.
Oh, freezing.
Yeah. Then again, every time it drops below 70, I'm cold.
Yeah.
And to think I'm from Pennsylvania. I used to be able to walk out in the snow in short sleeves and I'll be fine. And now I moved to Florida and my blood thinned out real quick.
Yeah, it does that on you.
We can't really talk about cold, though, because how cold is it at home now?
Oh, it's warmed right up now. It's let's see.
It's a crisp 32.
Sweltering 11.
Current temp at home, it's 30.
Oh, okay.
So the temperature's come up 60 degrees this week because it was negative 31 last weekend. Yes.
What is one piece of car advice that or life advice that you would give somebody, our generation that's trying to get into cars?
Hmm.
have a big
buy low, sell high. No,
that's the goal. Yeah, doesn't always work out that way, but that's the goal.
No, I guess if it, don't let anybody else tell you what's cool. Very if good. You like something, build it the way you like it. If people don't like it, you didn't build it for them. It's way easier for them to turn around and not look at your car than it is for you to build something you don't like and then drive it. So I just don't let other people tell you what's cool. Build what's cool. Build what you like. And if it puts a smile on your face, that's what it's about.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Scott? I'd have to agree with that. And then on top of that, to understand constructive criticism.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody tells you something, you know, that kind of knows something, you know, they you know, should at least embrace that, you know, or at least hear it, you know, because there's a lot of good stuff out there that may not be able to be conveyed correctly, but if you can kind of get the idea of what they're trying to get across to you, that's a good thing for you to listen to.
Yeah. And if someone...
Stop buying Model A's for $30,000.
Yeah. Well, there's one more you should do that with.
Other than the one that Ken has dumped way too much money into.
But as someone that's new in the whole car thing, I mean, granted, it's only been...
4 years.
4 years now. But, I mean, everywhere we go... I try to say we have a 54 Chevy and we have, well, blown apart, but a 32 Ford truck.
Oh, no, I'm going, that all them old guys that's got 57 Chevys that are rotten, that'll clank. I got a 57 or I got one just like that. That's my favorite phrase. Yeah. I got one just like, I mean, it's blue and it's a four door.
Yeah.
But it's just like that.
I got a 57 hardtop. It was a post car, but the post rusted out. So. But I'm going to fix that someday.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I'm going to fix it someday.
Yeah.
I'm going to get to that. There's a lot of cars. I drive around the county for work, and it's like drive by. It's like, the car is still sitting there. And I used to drop pins. So, like, if I was in my normal car, I could stop and be like, hey, what's up? But now it's, you'd stop, oh, I'm going to get to that. 3 or 4 years later, you're like.
There was a guy.
Rusting away.
There was a guy in our town that had an AA truck. He had two 27T tall 27T coupe, coupe bodies. He had. A 60 F-100 and he had a bunch of other stuff. 56 Lincoln. And I met him when he was like just turned 70 and he wouldn't part with any of them. Mm-hmm. And no, I'm going to fix that someday. I'm going to fix it. It's like, Bobby, you're 70 years old. Like, when was the last time you built a car? Well, I'm going to start now. Okay. So, you know, 2 years would go by and he hadn't touched any of them. You want to sell me those? No, I'm going to fix that someday. And for 16, 17 years, I'm going to fix that someday. Well, then, you know, and the unfortunate thing is I would have gladly paid him a fair price for any of those.
Yeah.
Right.
In fact, those tall T's, I offered him more than a fair price for those. I'm gonna do something with those someday. And 15 years goes by and his wife doesn't like the Montana cold anymore. She has family in a warmer state. And so they have an estate auction and they move out of state. I'm the only guy in our county that builds this rusty junk. I bought those T-bodies for $25 a piece at his estate auction when I would have given him $2,000 a piece if he'd have just sold them to me.
Oh my God.
But for 15 years, he was going to do something with them. And I end up buying those T-bodies for $25 a piece. And I felt bad, but... I was the highest bidder. was I going to bid against myself? And I ended up, I did end up giving him, after the sale closed, I did give him more money just because I didn't want to be that guy. But had I wanted to, I could have walked out of there with those, both those tees for $50 for the pair.
And if it wouldn't have been you, and if it wouldn't have been you,
yeah, if it had been
somebody anybody, else, been else would have been, that have bought it and put it on the trailer and never even.
I bought that day. I bought, and I think I still have pictures of, I don't have pictures of the tee bodies, but I have pictures of some other stuff I bought that day somewhere on my old Instagram posts. It was a couple summers ago, but I bought like two antique John Deere tractors, like a 1935 Case tractor. Those two tees. I bought another tee that was really rough. I bought that 56 Lincoln. I bought a 59 F100 short box and the 60 F100 long box. Oh, and a 59, like a, I forget what designation it is. It was the 2-ton. It was an old grain truck. The 59 Ford grain truck that is completely rust-free, dead straight, and ran. Jeez. And I think I spent $1,100 that day on all of that. And I would have given him so much more if he'd have just sold it to me.
Right. Yeah.
But no, I'm going to fix that someday. I'm going to fix that someday. And like you said, if anybody other than me, you know, I went back, like I said, I went back after the sale and I gave him more than double what my bid prices were at the end of the day. Just because I felt bad. But yeah, if you're not going to build it, get it to somebody who will. It's a shame that these things are just rotting into the ground. And, you know, I get it. Not everybody has the time or the agility or ability or the tools to do it. That's great. But don't hoard the stuff and keep guys that are going to, from having it, they're going to keep this thing alive.
Emotional attachment.
Yeah. We preach that because I remember, I mean, even the 54, the guy, it was everything else in his yard or everything else where we bought it from. He owns a shop, but everything else was like, I'll get to that. Like, and all the cars were sitting outside because the motorcycles filled a 2-bay shop. And there was, no, like you said, it would have took 4 days to get to the bike in the back. And I don't think any of them ran. Like, it was, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like,
and then you get the opposite side of the spectrum where it's, you know, you see wives, like when we went to Webster the 3-day, you see wives, their husbands just passed away. Well, my husband said it was worth this much. I went through the receipts and it's worth this much. And it's like, honey, it is not. It is so outrageously priced. You're going to be holding on to it for 3 years. And it's like, if you come across a good deal or if you come across somebody that wants to buy it at a good price, you're not doing anything with it. Just, you know, let it go.
Yeah, share the love, man.
Yeah.
Oh, and a lot of times, I mean, I'm fortunate. You seem fortunate enough to know that your wives know sort of what things cost. And, but a lot of times, I mean, when I started wrenching, you know, I was diesel mechanic for a while. When I was buying tools, I would go to auctions. I'd go to estate sales for people that passed away because their wives had no clue. Like, oh, that 1-inch impact, brand new, $1,000, but I don't know, is it worth $10? Yeah, man. You don't even want to like negotiate with them because you already feel bad.
Yeah.
But, and there's cars out there, which I missed. Ashley has an infatuation with, or a personal connection to 1927. Both of her grandparents were born that year. And I'm kicking myself because I had an opportunity to get a 27 tall tee local and I missed it.
And I keep telling you the same thing over and over again. That is going to be, I feel, one of my keep it for a long time or don't sell it vehicles. So I want something now where it's quick flips, make a couple bucks, quick flip, make a couple bucks, and wait till we get out of this house, till we find our forever home. That's going
to
be...
Yeah, that one would have been hard to get rid of.
Yeah.
But yeah. And it, that's another piece of advice that I would give younger people who want to get into this. Just because it's not the car that you want to own for the rest of your life, if it's a good deal, buy it.
Yeah, you can get there.
Because somewhere out there is somebody that is the car that they want to keep for the rest of their life. And you can still go to cruise nights. You can still have a lot of fun. You can take your girl out. You can take your kids out. You can go have a lot of fun with as a family or as a couple or just with your buddies. And eventually you're going to come across that person that is their forever car, and you're going to make some money on it. And if you do that 471 times, you can
afford to keep four.
You can buy three or four cars that you want to keep, you know?
Yeah.
And,
well, and that's what the 54 was when we bought it. I was like, I knew it needed a couple things, and I was like, oh, we'll do the couple things. We'll cruise it. And I really was not planning on buying the 32 from Ryan, but when I seen it, I was like, well, I have to go buy this because it's a 32 and it's my bare metal truck, and here it is.
Yeah.
And I didn't even negotiate with him. I gave him, I asked him, I was like, hey, are you negotiable? And he gave me another price lower, and I was like, okay, yeah, good. Load it up. Trailer's right there. Let's get to cranking this around.
And because... he brought me with him to go look at it. And he's like, all right, I want you to be a little tough. Because when we went to go see Michelangelo, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so awesome. And
She's a horrible person to go buy cars with.
Not anymore. I changed when we went to go get moonshine. I was like, babe, can we fix that? Can we fix that? Can we fix that? And he's like, yeah, we're getting this. Like, end of story. I'm like, okay, can we fix that?
I have ever, there's... In the backyard, there's every panel where there's rust on the cab.
So everywhere where I was pointing, I didn't realize there's a stack of panels behind me to fix it.
There's cab corner, both cab corners, the back rail of the cab, both door skins, the cowl panel, the lower cowls, all that came with it.
Yeah.
Nice.
So
we lucked out. We got a good deal.
Other than the floor. I'm going to have to rebuild a new floor for it, but because they apparently couldn't pull a tape measure. The floor is like 2 inches too skinny. So the doors, you can look down and see the floor, like the ground. And I'm like, it couldn't have been like this. And then Dad's 34, and I'm like, oh, there's supposed to be panels there. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. So, but.
Yeah, my wife. She doesn't really care about, she doesn't want to spend time in the shop. She does enjoy the family time that we spend in the car. She is getting at a point now in her life where she, for the first time ever, because I've tried to buy her vintage cars in the past, I forget what anniversary, I bought her a 67 Galaxy 500 XL convertible. And she within a month wanted to trade it in on a new car. I'm like, no, like how much you figure you're going to get on trade in? I let her tell me the number, which was a stupid low number because she didn't know what the car was worth. I said, I will write you a check right now for the down payment on your new car. And I'm keeping the Galaxy. I'm taking it back. But I've tried several times to get her excited about it. And kind of a goofy story. I accidentally bought a pink Thunderbird convertible.
Accidentally.
Well, I bought it on purpose. I didn't realize it was pink.
Oh, okay.
And
is it apricot or is it
pink? Oh, no, pink? No. This bad boy is like carnation pink. Like, it's a lighter pink than my Mercury. And I already hear all the Mary Kay cosmetic jokes about my 63 Mercury. When I brought that car home, she just immediately fell in love with it. She's like, that's my car. And, you know, I tease her about it, that it's registered in my name. It's not your car. But if it got her excited about it. And so, yeah, that's her car. We pulled that. So I had a white 60 T-Bird coupe. And I found it. It's funny. I just realized this. I was actually here in Orlando when I found the car online in Washington. And this is 3 years ago. And so I see a white 60 T-Bird convertible. Matches my coupe. Exact same car, same color, right? I'm like, price seems fair. I called the guy and talked to the guy for an hour on the phone, asking him everything about the car. Never dawned on me to ask the question because of what color it was, because it was a white car. Well, the deal was he had it in, it was just a pole barn. It had a cement floor, but it was just a pole barn, and there was no lights in it, and there was about 30 other cars in the shop with it. And he drove the car in 2001. He drove that car in the shop, shut the key off, and it hadn't moved since. So it had 20 years of dust sitting on this car. So I call him from Florida, talk to him for like an hour. The following week, I get home to Montana. I grab my trailer. I drive 5.5 hours to his, one way to his house. Mm-hmm. We go back in this dark shop. I'm right there, but I'm not going to rub the dust off this thing. I don't want to scratch the paint and everything, so I'm not disturbing any of the dust, but I'm looking at the car, but it's under 20 years of dust, and it's in a shop with no lights.
Right.
So I'm still, in, as far as I know, I'm still looking at a white Thunderbird convertible. And he wouldn't, which... I don't fault him for this because tire kickers waste everybody's time. He wasn't going to pull that thing out because there was 20 cars in front of it. He wasn't going to pull it out until we had a deal.
Right.
So I went back, climbed over a bunch of other junk, saw the car in person. We came to a price. I gave him the money. And so he goes and gets his Kubota, and we start dragging all these cars out to get to this T-Bird. So it's like an hour later, we finally get this T-Bird out in the sun. And this pulls it out in the sun, and I'm... I step back. I said, that car's pink. He's like, yeah. Like, I thought it was white. He goes, no, it's pink. I said, I don't want a pink Thunderbird. And he's like, well, you own one. And he's like, dick. And so I put it on the trailer, and I... For 5.5 hours driving home, I just looked in the mirror at that stupid pink thing. It was like, and I pulled in the driveway, and my wife fell in love with it. And I was like, yep, was thinking of you the whole time. About that right for you.
It was meant to be.
The whole plan.
That's so funny.
Yeah, we, Ashley, I kind of, when we met, I kind of told her, like, you don't really have a choice if you want to spend time with me. We're going to be, you know, working on shit because that's, like you said, it's cheaper than therapy. I wasn't in a real good headspace prior to her. So that was my therapy. Like, that was the one thing that didn't go wrong.
Well, and let's back up a step because I pulled up in my little rinky-dink Chevy Cruze and he said, thank God you drive a Chevy. We've since expanded on more than just Chevy, but
I was just, you know, at birth in a car family, you pick a brand, and that's instilled in you that that's the only thing. They all have their quirks.
And brand loyalty is cool. I have none.
I have
Corvairs. I have Studebakers, I have Volkswagens, I have Fords, I have Chevys. I only have one Dodge. I had a couple of Plymouths, but I sold them. I've even got a Nash. If they're cool, they're cool. And I even had a Borgward Isabella Coupe one time. That was a goofy looking car. Most people never even heard of those. But I ended up with one of those and threw a Datsun 4-cylinder in it, and away it went.
Hell yeah.
So it had the opening front door, right? Am I thinking of the right thing?
No.
No, that's an Isetta.
That's the Isetta, the front of the car. No, a Borgward, they were called an Isabella. They were just a little two-door, goofy-looking thing. No, you're thinking of the BMW Isetta, the Urkelmobile.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, Urkel made that cool, though.
Oh, he did, dude. He
That just popped up on my Facebook or Instagram.
So that car is at Starboard every year. That actual car, that rail job with the Isetta body on it that Urkel drove in that episode. It's at Starboard every year.
That's awesome.
I don't think you saw it. I don't think so.
That's a Borgward Isabella.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's nice.
That's cute. Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of a Fossil Vega.
Yeah. I respect brand loyalty, and you know, I like to give my buddies grief. They like to give me grief, but it's like, I can't really sit there and, you know, with any kind of conviction, bag on them for being Chevy fans when behind me there's, you know, four Corvairs, the worst car Chevrolet ever made, and I've got four of them, and I'm going to give you crap, you know? Yeah. It's
like, well, I mean, I did name my dog Chevy, but.
So you could leave the yard.
Yeah. I'd have named him Ford, but I want to be able to leave the yard. So
Matt's Off-Road made Corvairs cool.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, his wagon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you look in the yard, there's Mopars represented, two Chevrolets, a Ford. Used to be a piece of another Ford in the backyard.
Yeah.
You know, it's whatever's cool, and I don't really care what it is. If you're happy with it, drive it.
Yeah. And then you get the crossbreeds. You're pulling.
Well, I mean, I am putting a Chevy motor in the Ford, but.
But I mean, we had a mantra when we were at the swap meet for, motorcycles, but I think it applies everywhere. Yeah. You bang it to fit, you paint it to match. Like you can make stuff work as long as you put the time and effort into it. And depending on how good your skills are, you can make it work.
Yeah. The reason I own a Dodge is I bought it as a donor chassis for a Ford. Mm-hmm. I have a 1940 Ford three-window short bus. And I just did some Googlifying, and I found the diesel-powered dually that had the closest specs in wheelbase and width, and it was a Dodge Extra Cab. So I have a 98 Dodge Extra Cab because the width works as is, and the wheelbase is only 5/8 of an inch different. Oh, wow. So that's really easy to solve. That's move a spring mount and you're done. So that's why I own that Dodge, is I bought it as a donor for the bus that will someday maybe make it into the shop. I don't know. I'm so ADD. I keep buying new stuff and getting excited about it.
So with that, we're going to end off.
Yeah. Well, first off, before we go, don't forget to go to our link for Throttle Addict. If you use the code word Hot Rod, you get 15% off. Also in the link is the link tree is for Facebook and Instagram as well.
All right. Later, guys.
See you.
See you.
Thank you.